Welcome to Family Health by Mini First Aid. Mini First Aid are the UK's leading family first aid provider, and we are delighted to bring our latest podcast series to you, giving you all the information that you need around family health subjects. Thanks for joining. Series 1 of Family Health by Mini First Aid podcast is sponsored by Savlon Scar Prevention Gel. Savlon Scar Prevention Gel helps soothe pain, promote faster healing, as well as reducing the risk of scarring when used on minor wounds, superficial burns, and grazes. With 6 children in my house, scrapes and cuts are plentiful, so my first aid box saviour is Savlon Scar Prevention Gel. Hello, I'm Kate Ball, and I'm the founder of Mini First Aid, and welcome to our podcast, Family Health by Mini First Aid. Now, it's great to hear that you've been enjoying our new Family Health podcast series, where we will continue to bring you top family health advice from leading experts. So I am delighted to introduce our guest today, the lovely, lovely Kelly Green. Kelly is a mini first aid trainer, but with a background as a paediatric nurse and most recently in A&E. So this incredibly busy lady is also a mummy as well. Kelly, I don't know where you find time to do everything. Anyway, Kelly, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Kelly, can you tell everybody just a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Kelly, which you've already said. I have been a paediatric nurse for about 11 years now. I have had experience in a number of different areas, from hospital environments to community environments. I've even worked with ventilators and tracheostomies out in the community, where I've trained other carers to look after children with them. But like you said, Kate, my most recent role within the NHS was an A&E nurse, so I was a paediatric sister in our A&E department. I was also A&E nurse during the pandemic, so lots of varied experience. And I think really my kind of journey really started when I became a mommy myself. So I actually became a mommy in lockdown. And I was able to see things from a completely different perspective. So although I'd worked with children and families for over 11 years, when I became a mum myself, I saw it from a completely different side. And yeah, that's kind of when I joined Mini First Aid and decided I wanted to share that knowledge and experience of my, you know, my background and share it with other families and parents and grandparents and anyone who wanted to learn, you know, particularly baby and child first aid, but just basically, you know, wanted to learn how to save a life. And here I am now, and I am the incredibly proud owner of Mini First Aid Shropshire, Mini First Aid Herefordshire and Worcester as well. So...
See, I told you she was busy, didn't I? This is a very busy lady, so we're very lucky to have her. Kelly, we particularly asked you to chat to us today about your experiences of working in A&E, because it's obviously, for parents and families and carers, it can be an incredibly scary time if your family needs to visit an A&E. And what we wanted to do, or what I wanted to do as well, as a mum myself, but also just for all of our listeners, was to try and find out a bit more to take at least some of the fear factor away. So we're going to talk about what's going to be expected. And does that resonate with you, Kelly?
Absolutely. I think really, you know, particularly being an A&E nurse, we see children and families at their most vulnerable time, and, you know, being able to help and support them from a nursing perspective and as part of a wider, you know, healthcare professional team. Now I'm also able to see it from a parent side as well, and, you know, bring those experiences in, because I do completely understand how parents feel, because I have also been that mom on the other side that has had to take their little girl to A&E. And even though I've got 11 years experience as a nurse, it's still, I understand it's still terrifying, because I'm there as a mom. I'm not there as a nurse. I'm there as a mom, and it's a completely different area for me. You know, it's my little girl, and I need help at that time. So I do get how scary it can be. And, you know, being able to reassure parents is, yeah, my main goal now, really.
Now, you for me, you said about working in paediatric A&E and that you've been there yourself. I've been there myself on multiple occasions with my children over the years, and it always seems very busy in paediatric A&E. Tell me a little bit, can you give us a picture for everybody listening of a day in the life of a paediatric nurse in A&E?
Absolutely. I think you've really kind of hit it there, where it's incredibly busy. We understand it's incredibly busy, and it does look incredibly busy. You know, you get there and there's people everywhere, and I think as a mom that can be quite scary. But kind of to talk you through like a day in the life with me. So we, as a paediatric nurse, so as a sister, I was triaging parents and their children that come through the doors. So it would be we'd have handover, we'd turn up for work, we'd have handover of who was already there. So we, you know, we don't want to miss anyone. So we find out who's already there, who is due to come in. So we have a list, you know, who's already booked in at reception. And then for me, it would be primarily I would go and triage, you know, the children who would come through the doors. So we find out, you know, why they've come in, signs and symptoms, lots and lots of information we try and get from them to try and establish what's going on, what's happened, and, you know, how we can help. Kind of going on throughout the day is a lot of triaging. Obviously, there's a lot of people coming to A&E. But also it's about working with, you know, other members of the team as well. So sometimes it might have been more appropriate for me to come out and start dealing with, you know, some treatments, you know, and swap with people. But I think the big thing throughout the day is, yes, you know, you're bringing your child in for me to kind of see and assess and treat. But also we're there for the parents as well. And a lot of the time is spending time with the parents, reassuring the parents, you know, giving parents the correct information, telling them what's going to happen. But also, you know, maybe why there's a waiting time. Why is that time there? You know, a lot of parents want to know why they've not been seen first, which is completely understandable. But it's, you know, kind of reassuring them that this is the process. This is what happens. Somewhere in that day, I will get a break. I will grab a coffee somewhere in that day. And it's kind of just keeping going through that same process, really, you know, making sure everyone gets seen, everyone gets treated, but making sure all the doctors and other professionals, you know, also get the correct information as well.
Well, that's great. So it's a busy day then, isn't it? But I think, you know, you talked about it being busy and sometimes people not knowing if they're going to be seen first. And I think sometimes parents, carers, grandparents need to know when should they call 999 and when shouldn't they? So if they're going to go to A&E in an ambulance, when do they or don't they? Or otherwise, what other services might be appropriate? Could you give parents and carers that advice for me?
Absolutely. I think from both a parent perspective and a nurse perspective, I would say if you think you need to call 999, the thought is there for a reason, and no one is ever going to shout at anyone for phoning 999. If you think it's a 999 situation, absolutely, you know, press those numbers on that phone, call them, get advice from that operator. More so as a parent, if I've ever, you know, with my little girl, Brianna, if I've ever had any concerns and I've thought to myself, oh, do I need to call 999? If I'm thinking it's a medical emergency, bad enough for me to think, should I call 999? I would call 999. And I think don't be afraid to do that either. I think that's absolutely fine. I think really with other services, there are some other services. So if you're not sure, so you've got the NHS 111. So you can always phone them and they can give you advice and guidance over the phone. It might be that they, you know, suggest a walk-in centre. They might suggest a GP appointment. But alternatively, they might also say, no, we're going to send an ambulance out as well, you know, and they can help, you know, guide you and give you some advice over the phone. But yeah, it might be, you know, actually call your GP as well. So it might be getting an appointment with the GP. Or there are a lot of walk-in centres dotted around everywhere now. So you can always go to one of those walk-in centres. And some of those are located in hospitals as well. So you might go to a walk-in centre, but you might then go to that walk-in centre and they might then send you to A&E.
Right. OK, so a 999 is real gut instinct. Would you say there's an absolute must for ringing 999? What's an absolute 999 emergency? So what have you got to call for?
So your medical emergency. So if you think your child's having a severe, you know, allergic reaction, if they are choking and it's not coming out, I would certainly suggest phoning 999 for that. The big one is if your child's not breathing. Absolutely, don't even hesitate with that. You know, call 999, put them on loudspeaker, and then you've got those two hands ready to do whatever you need to do. But also, if you're just thinking something's not right with my child, so they're not well, they aren't eating, they're not drinking, their health is declining rapidly. If their health is declining rapidly and you're seeing a massive deterioration in your child, I mean, parents know their children better than anyone else. And if you're seeing that massive decline and you think something's wrong here, then absolutely, I'd say then as well.
So there has been, I guess, a lot in the media about the NHS and how stressed and stretched, and you talked about earlier about possibly only getting a quick coffee break. So I guess for some of us, we might be a bit nervous in this healthcare crisis, you know, should we bother you, right? I don't want to make a fuss. What would you say to people who are thinking, oh God, I just don't want to be a bother, you know, we'll manage, I just don't want to bother? What would your advice be?
My advice is you're never a bother. We're there for a reason. We're there to help you, you know, we're there to, you know, try and make people feel better. And I think it's never a bother. And I really don't want parents or grandparents or carers to think, I really don't want to bother them. We would much rather you do bother us, because we'd much rather be able to treat your child and make them better than you sit at home. And, you know, you're sat at home thinking, should I go in? I think I should go in, but I don't want to go in. And by that time, we don't want to see any health deteriorating. So I would say it's never a bother. We would much rather see you and be able to treat you sooner than, you know, the situation getting worse. And even for those minor illnesses, it's never a bother, because you're concerned, you are worried that something is not right. And that means that you get seen. It's never a bother. We would much rather you see us than not see us.
Great. Thanks, Kelly. So, you know, I'm thinking now, right, I'm walking through the door of A&E with my very poorly child or relative or friend. When I go through those doors, those double doors, I'm buzzed in. What can I expect? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen from that point where I go through that door?
It is completely scary. I do understand that. Like I say, I've been there from a mom's perspective as well. I think what you are going to see is, as you walk through, you will get signed in at reception. You will then get triaged by a triage nurse, which is one of the jobs that I was doing as an A&E nurse. So we will ask you lots of questions. We will find out what's going on. We will discuss with, you know, the parents, because sometimes, you know, we have to be the advocates for the children, particularly when they're of an age where they can't speak to us. We will 100% take into account parents' thoughts and feelings. You know, it's, you know, we're talking about what's wrong, you know, and even if they say something's just not right, the amount of times parents have said to me, I'm not sure, but something is just not right, they're just not themselves, then we take that into account as well. You will have a set of observations taken. So we will check little ones' heart rate, respiratory rate, blood pressure, temperature, all the what we call baseline observations. We do understand as well that it's really difficult to get these off children. They are scared. They don't really understand what's going on. You know, you've got new people that are coming in trying to, you know, check temperatures and put little lights on fingers and things like that. And, it, you know, we get that it is going to be quite scary for them. And I think, you know, that's also part of the assessment for me, because if they are fighting me off and they don't want me doing that, that's always a good sign. It's, you know, when someone isn't really responding too well to that and, you know, they don't really mind you doing that. And parents might say, that's not normal. Normally they'd be running around, and, you know, that's part of the assessment process. And I think even in this, you know, short space of time, as, you know, in the triage room with us, we can gather a lot of information, you know, and a lot of it is information on top of information that you're already, you know, gathering. You're doing a set of observations, but you're also seeing how the child reacts to those observations as well. You'll then be triaged. You will then get seen by either a doctor or someone called an advanced nurse practitioner, possibly, depending on, you know, what you've come in with. There's a range of professionals that you might come across or might see during your time. It might be that you have to go to some different departments, so they might send you for x-rays or things like that. There's lots of different things depending on what, you know, what you come in with. But, you know, during that journey, what I would like to say is, just because you came in at a certain time, if someone comes in after you as well, don't be alarmed if they get seen first. It does depend on the severity of the illness and what comes in. So not necessarily if you've come in by an ambulance will you get seen before someone that's come in via foot. I think that's really important. Yeah, I think a lot of people think because they've come in via ambulance, they will get seen before anyone that, you know, just walks in through the door. But I think the important thing to remember is you might have someone that comes in via ambulance, maybe, let's say, with a broken leg. I'm just using examples here. Okay. But also you have someone that comes in via foot, but they're having difficulty in breathing. You know, parents have brought them in and there's difficulty in breathing. We want to make sure that, you know, that one with difficulty in breathing is not having difficulty in breathing anymore. We need to sort that problem as well. And, you know, that's what the triaging is there for. We need to make sure, you know, who's coming with what, the severity of it and things like that.
So what type of healthcare professionals might families see? So you talked about triage, the nurse, the advanced nurse practitioner, maybe a doctor.
Yep.
Who else might you see? Because there's lots of different uniform, isn't there? And lots of different colour tabards and that sort of thing. So who else might you get to see?
There's lots and lots of different people that you might see. And I know you've just mentioned lots of different uniforms, lots of, you know, different colours on here, on our arms. And I think it varies as well from hospital to hospital. So I know the hospital where I used to work was a completely different uniform as a nurse to where I'd previously worked. So that's even confusing as well, you know, depending on where you go. But you might come across, obviously, nurses, doctors of differing grades. So, you know, you've got consultants, you've got registrars. So it might be a number of different people that you see in relation to doctors. We have support workers, so clinical support workers. They are so amazing. Our support workers, you know, when I worked in A&E, we rely on them so much. They are just the most amazing superstars that work with us. And, you know, they are also part of the, you know, the assessment process. You know, we might be triaging and then one of our support workers might come in and say, we've just had someone come in, but I'm really quite concerned about them. You know, is there any chance you can just come and have a quick look? And absolutely, we take that seriously as well, you know. Physios, we have radiographers, phlebotomists, so, you know, the people who take blood. You might even see student nurses, student physios. You know, there's lots of different students training to do the jobs that, you know, that we do. But you might also see social workers. And, you know, safeguarding nurses. There's so many different healthcare professionals, and don't be alarmed with social services either. You know, it's social workers. There's nothing to be alarmed by.
Oh, that's good. It just sounds like such a massive team of people. No wonder it feels busy. So a parent, when they come in, I know when I've been in, you get asked a lot of questions. So, and that's an emotional time. And sometimes all your common sense goes out of the window. Now, as a mum of six, sometimes I've been known to say the wrong child's name, for example, because I've been so flustered. What do parents need to be ready to tell the staff? What advice would you give them? What information are they going to be asked for?
Yeah, so information that you'll be asked kind of first of all is what's brought you in today? You know, what's the main reason that you've come in? You'll be asked the child's name, date of birth, which I've even forgotten with Brianna when I've taken Brianna in before because I've been in such a panic. So it's so easy to even forget little things like that. I do get it. Any allergies? So are they allergic to anything? They'll be asked immunizations. You know, when did they last have immunizations? Are they up to date with immunizations? you will be asked, I'm trying to go down my list now in my head, any medical history. So have they got any medical history that we need to be aware of? Has this happened before? Is this something completely new? But I think really, you know, we will ask loads and loads of questions, and we do understand that if you don't know any, that's absolutely fine, or you can't think, that's absolutely fine. But I think the information that parents really do need to get to us is what's brought them in. Have there been any changes? Has it got worse? So has this been how long has it been going on for? If it's been going on for a week, has it just stayed the same, or have we suddenly had that decline and that's what's brought you in today? But basically any information about the incident or what's happening is kind of what we need. Anything that they can tell us is relevant.
Okay, that's great. And I know obviously some cases are then admitted as patients into hospital because they may need to have further treatment, etc. But some children, babies and children, are sent home. So they're sent home following an A&E visit. So what do you, as a parent and a carer, what would you recommend as a nurse people need to do after their visit to A&E?
Keep an eye on the child, which, make sure if there's any decline or they're not getting any better, then it's, you know, another trip to get them seen, whether that be a GP appointment or whether that be, you know, back to A&E. I think, you know, sometimes if they're admitted to a ward and they get discharged from a ward, they might get what in a previous hospital I've worked in is something called open access. So if it deems appropriate, if they're discharged and say within, you know, 24 to 48 hours, they're still not happy or there's issues when they get home, they can take them back to that ward and get them seen again. But if you are discharged from somewhere like A&E, it is making sure that you're happy to be discharged as well. You know, I understand it's a really busy environment and it is a really scary environment, and it might look like we are all running around doing something, which we probably are. There's always something going on. But before you go home, make sure that you are happy, A, with the advice that's been given, and B, that you're happy to take them home. You know, it's, as a mom, you know, I've been told that, you know, okay, we're happy for you to go home. You can be discharged. You know, if there's no improvement, go back to your GP. And at times I've said, no, I need to stay because I'm not happy to go home yet. I need to make sure that my child is well enough to go home. And at the moment, I don't think that's the case. And that was fine. We got monitored for a few more hours. Then I was happy. The doctors were happy. And actually, I left a lot more confident. So make sure that you're happy to go home and make sure you're happy with the advice. So have you got all the information that you need? Do you have any information leaflets? You know, we have so many different advice leaflets that we can give out to you. Head injuries being the biggest one. I think that's the biggest one that tends to go home from A&E, head injuries. But making sure you know what to look for when you get home, you know, particularly on whatever illness you've come in with, make sure that you're aware of what signs and symptoms to look out for when you get home. And make sure that if any of those signs and symptoms happen that you were warned about, that you bring them straight back to us.
Okay.
But just keep an eye on them and let the GP know, you know, just saying that we've been to A&E. This is the advice that was sought. It might be that medical records need changing. My little girl now is dairy. She's allergic to dairy. So once we'd got that confirmed in hospital, because she was quite poorly with it, once we'd realised what it was, we phoned the GP. He then changed all the records to say, you know, allergies were now dairy as well. But I think it's just making sure that as a parent, you're comfortable and happy with the advice that's been given. And if for whatever reason you are concerned, absolutely take them back.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Great advice, Kelly. You've alluded to the fact that you've been to A&E yourself as a parent. So you've taken off your nurse's hat as such and gone in as a parent.
Yeah.
What did you learn about what's different going in as a parent versus working there?
It really opened my eyes. I think, you know, being an A&E nurse, we are used to comforting the parents. We are used to reassuring the parents. We are used to also doing that whilst dealing with the child. And I think when you can take yourself emotionally out of it, you're able to, you know, do that treatment and, you know, do your job. But as a parent, looking back now, my goodness, I was just everywhere. I was crying. I was panicking myself. She's had a couple of trips to A&E now. She's had breathing problems. So she went in with breathing problems, and the other one was an allergy to dairy. So both, which were meant she was very quite, you know, she was quite poorly at the time. And the first thing I said was, this is not my little girl. She's poorly. I know my little girl. She's normally running around and she just doesn't want to do anything. I can't get her to eat or drink, or, you know, particularly when it was the breathing problems. I was looking out for, you know, different things with her breathing that I was taught as a nurse to look out for. I was seeing all of that, that I always say, if we're seeing those signs and symptoms, that's, you know, she's struggling. But yeah, we went in and I didn't tell them I was a nurse.
Okay, that's interesting. Why did you not?
I'm a mom.
Right, okay.
Because I want them to treat me like a mom. Okay. I haven't got my nurse's head on at this point. You know, maybe when she's been treated and things, and I ask certain questions, they tend to say, are you a healthcare professional? Do you have, you know, and I'm like, yes, I'm a nurse. And they're like, oh, why didn't you tell us that to start with? And I don't tell you that to start with because I want you to treat me like a mom. I want you to reassure me. I want you to look after me and my little girl, because I'm trying to look after my little girl. At the moment, she's really quite poorly and I don't know what to do. You know, I haven't got my nurse's head on. I've got my mom hat on at this point. And I think, yeah, it's scary. And I think for me, it changed my way of thinking. And that's kind of where I can draw into my classes as well, because as a parent, I've been there. I understand the fear. I understand the, you know, the logic goes completely out the window. My husband always used to say to me, he said, what would you do if Brianna turned up in A&E? You know, what would you do as a nurse if Brianna turned up in, you know, to A&E? And it's, you kind of have to think about that. But then when it's your child, I don't know. I just, something's not right and she's poorly and I need to get her seen. You know, and I think I get the why parents need to be reassured as well. You know, it's not just the child coming to you in A&E, it's the parents or grandparents with them, and it's scary. I do completely get it. And particularly when you are the parent sat in a waiting room watching loads of other people get seen and you're not getting seen yet. I do get that. And I do get the frustration as well.
Kelly, thank you. I've got a question for you then, because you've given us the insight into what it's like, what going in might be like, the questions that you might be asked. You've acknowledged that it would be scary. You've talked about the fact that the nurses can reassure you at triage as well. And I would say it's okay to tell a nurse or a healthcare professional that you are scared. Can you just, I guess for me, what would you want families listening to take away from what we've discussed today around visiting A&E, particularly with children?
I think there's probably a couple of points. I think it's okay to ask questions. No question is a silly question. We really want you to ask those questions. You know, do you think it's this? Or why do you think it's this? So yeah, absolutely, it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to ask for a second opinion. As a mom, I've done that myself as well. As a nurse, I've done that. As a parent, I've done that. It's absolutely fine to get a second opinion. And I think for me, particularly the younger they are as well, because, you know, we've already discussed that you will be asked lots and lots of questions. Okay, lots of questions and some that you might not know the answer to. And a little trick that I've kind of picked up from being a mom myself, Brianna now has like a little medical bag. So she has a little lunchbox. It has her inhalers in it. It has, you know, her medication in it that we might need. And particularly when she's poorly or we know she's not very well, we have it to hand. It's a little grab bag, we call it. So if for whatever reason that she did need to go to hospital, or did need to go to the GP, or there was that decline, you know, in her health, we pick up that bag and go. And also in that bag is her little red book. Now, a lot of people have that little red book and they put it to the side. And from a nurse's perspective, they're really useful to have. And from a parent okay. perspective, they're really useful to have. So when I've gone in with Brianna, they've said to me, when did she last have her immunizations? What immunizations has she had? I can't remember. I don't know when she last, I can't remember the dates. I can't remember what they were. And I go, I'll just check in the little red book. And I've got that little red book with me. But also as well, it's really emotional. You know, normally I can't see the red book for crying if I'm in A&E with Brianna. And I just hand the red book to the nurses and then they check all that information for me. And I think for me, that's one of the biggest kind of, I don't know, learning points for me as a mom is to have something ready to go and all that information in one place. And from a nurse's perspective, that's really good for us because we've got a lot of information. We know their name, their date of birth, their NHS number on there. We know their milestones. It even tells you in there, have they hit milestones? Are there any concerns with, you know, with the GP? And in the back as well, there's a growth chart. So we can see, are they gaining weight? Are they not gaining weight? When were they last weighed? There's a lot of information in that little red book. And from when I've had Brianna, it's just been an absolute lifesaver for me when we've gone into hospital with her. So yeah, you might get asked by a nurse, do you have your red book with you? And I make sure that I have it now.
Kelly, that's wonderful. Do you know, I'd never even thought, and you'd think with the number of children that I'd have, but I've never thought about grabbing the red book to go or having it ready. I know where they are, but having them ready to take because there is so much information. Kelly, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for all the insights that you've shared with us today. And I know that it will be really, really helpful to all of our families who've been listening. Please do check out and subscribe to our social channels to keep up to date with our latest episodes. And also, if you'd like to watch the full video, if you want to see what me and Kelly look like, you can head over to our YouTube channel and watch the video of today's conversation, or you can choose to listen on all your favourite podcast spaces. Also, I should say that if there are any topics that you'd like us to discuss in future episodes of the Family Health by Mini First Aid, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think about the topics that we've covered so far, and please do share with us if there are particular experts that you would love us to talk to. So thanks again to paediatric nurse and first aid trainer Kelly Green. I will let you get back to your crazy, busy life. Being a mummy and doing all those things. And I guess on behalf of all the listeners, just to thank you for all the work that you do for so many families in paediatric A&E. Thank you again for everyone for listening. Thank you for listening to Family Health by Mini First Aid. I hope you found our podcast really useful and informative. If you want to know more about Mini First Aid classes, courses, qualification courses or first aid supplies, please do visit minifirstaid.co.uk or look us up on all your favourite social platforms at Mini First Aid. I take Savlon Scar Prevention Gel everywhere with me so that I'm always prepared for the many little and sometimes bigger accidents that my kids encounter. Thank you again to Savlon Prevention Gel for sponsoring Series 1 of the Family Health by Mini First Aid podcast.